know my testimony that I grew up in church, in a Christian home. About a week or two after being born, I was in church, okay? And I was in church ever since then. So I've been around it for all of my life. By the time I got to youth group, I had some good youth pastors who tried to teach us evangelism. They taught us methods of going door to door and knocking on doors and talking to people directly about Jesus or handing out tracts in different areas and so on and so forth. They had really great heart for this, but our methodology was a little messed up. Okay, to be honest with you, us as teenagers going door to door, we had a lot of doors slammed in our face. Okay, we had a lot of people hiding. You could see them hiding through their window, and they just didn't want to answer the door. Okay, because they knew that we were there, and they're like, "No, we don't want to talk to these people." Okay, we tried to talk to them, but that didn't happen. One of our youth pastors took us to a park just a few blocks away from Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. And so we're passing out tracts in the park. And I just remember this one gentleman who, for whatever reason, he had to cross through the park two or three times in short succession. And we just kept trying to hand him a tract every single time. And like, we never actually engaged him in conversation, but we kept trying to give him a tract because that's what we were taught. This is evangelism. This is how you do evangelism, okay? So none of these efforts really ever got us to a place where we were able to talk to people about Jesus. Part of the problem was the method, okay? When you're handing out things like that, especially on a street corner in Chicago, it sounds more like a sales pitch. It seems more like, hey, come to my business so that you can patronize my business, okay? And that's why you're handing out flyers on the street. That's what people think. It also didn't do a whole lot for addressing questions that those particular people had that we were encountering, okay? And kept them from seeing kind of the beauty of the gospel, those questions that they have in their minds. And the reality is that back in those days, if we had been asked too many questions as teenagers, it could have been actually more detrimental to our faith than anything else. Because we could have been blown away by some of the questions that people had and really felt like we were ill-equipped and unprepared. What my story really points out is weaknesses in the methodology. Okay, methodology is impersonal. When you're just handing people a tract, that's an impersonal way of doing things. It could be considered rude. Those of you who remember what it's like to have a family meal, everybody home at once and actually have a family dinner. And then you get somebody who has great heart and great passion comes knocking on your door when you finally have a family meal and goes, "Hey, I want to tell you all about Jesus." And they're going, "Hey, I want to spend time with my family." That can be considered rude, okay? Now, at the time, of course, we're going, okay, they don't understand. We are trying to meet their needs. They need Jesus. They just don't know that they need Jesus. Well, you got to lead them to that fact that they need Jesus, okay? Evangelism, basically, in that methodology, wound up being an event on the calendar. Okay, everybody, on Saturday we're going to go evangelize. And that's not evangelism. Evangelism is actually talking to someone and helping them see things, not just an event on the calendar of passing out tracts. It made people into prizes to be won rather than people to be loved. Okay? I don't know, if you've grown up in the church long enough, you may have heard the term soul winning. Are you a soul winning church? Are you a soul winner? I've always hated that term. I'm like, soul winner, that just makes it sound like they're a prize to be gained and that we don't care about them at all. And in fact, there are some branches of Christianity where that's true, where in essence, all they care about is racking up numbers. The guy prayed the prayer. Okay, move on. And they go on to somebody else and they're all proud that they got 50 people to pray the prayer that month. And the reality is, how many of them are being discipled? How many of them are still coming to your church? How many of them are actually becoming active and alive in their faith? Or did you just rack up some people who said the prayer so they could get you to shut up and leave? Okay, let's be honest. Final thing that it teaches us is that while proclaiming the gospel may be a fairly simple thing, getting to the proclamation of the gospel can sometimes be a difficult thing. Okay, so that brings in a need for what we're going to call or term pre-evangelism. And there's three big reasons why we need to take kind of the emphasis off of just simple proclamation and also be focused on some of the steps leading up to proclamation of the good news. First of all, people are less interested in the gospel in general. The use of a tract 30 years ago, that was the primary way to get someone to understand the gospel because they could have it in their hands, they could read it for themselves, they would process that information and they would take that in. Okay, people don't do that now. People have a whole bunch of questions about who Jesus is, what the Bible is really all about, all kinds of different things. And we need to be able to address those questions and help them to work through those questions. Okay, now, I've been kind of down on the whole tract thing and other older versions of evangelism. Please don't think that I'm telling you to throw the baby out with the bathwater. A tract can be a very good and useful tool, but realize that it is a tool. It is not the thing in and of itself. Okay. We need kind of a tool that's going to supplement our knowledge of the gospel, and so that people who are indifferent, maybe even skeptical or hostile to the gospel, will at least be considering and listening to it. Okay. Second reason we need to be changing some of this stuff is that the world that we live in has changed in a variety of ways. We live in a world that has absolutely rejected moral absolutes. Okay. Today's people believe that one person's moral system is just as valuable as someone else's moral system. In fact, this rejection of absolutes affects evangelism. Here's what the author Gene Veith actually said. It is hard to proclaim the forgiveness of sins to people who believe that since morality is relative, they have no sins to forgive. Okay, so if morality is relative, it doesn't matter whose morality we're following, then there's really no sins to be forgiven. He goes on and says, it is not the lunatic fringe that are rejecting the concept of absolute truth. It's 2/3 of the American people. Okay, so when you go outside these walls, there's 2/3 of the American people who are all going and saying the same thing. Well, your morality is just as valid as my morality, and so on and so forth. So therefore, there's no sins necessarily to be forgiven because we all have our own systems. When morals are viewed as relative, the Christian message winds up becoming irrelevant and even coming across as judgmental. We live in a world that is skeptical of all truth. Many people believe that truth cannot be known apart from science or the scientific method. And I was just watching a TV show this week that kind of proved that. You had this like intellectually minded guy who's trying to learn how to be funny and says, I've come up with the perfect joke and I figured it out by science. Really? You came up with the perfect joke through science. Okay? Which cracks me up too, because people say science is not a religion. Yes, it is. Okay? When you have that much reliance on science that you're trying to figure out everything by the scientific method, yeah. Okay? But there are people who are like that. They are skeptical of all truth. They're skeptical of religious truth. They go, we can't know anything that Jesus said or did for sure. We've gone over this with the Jesus seminar people and their little rocks they stick in a bowl. Yes, I think Jesus said this. No, I don't think Jesus said this. And unfortunately, not one of them actually has a degree in anything related to the Bible. That's the scary part with those folks, okay? But it does bring up an interesting point. We have a harder time with evangelism because we are further from the events. The people back in the first century, especially in the land of Israel, they heard who Jesus was. They heard something happened. They didn't know exactly what, but they heard something happened. And then when they meet a witness to it and said, I saw it firsthand, it makes a big difference. So we do have it a little bit more difficult in that regard. Some people even take it so far as doubting events that have happened in our own lifetime. We all know of people who doubt that the Holocaust took place. Okay, we've heard of those folks. Even though they can sit down with someone who was there, a witness to the events, someone who actually had to live through it, and they go, nope, didn't happen. Like, some of these people want to deny truth. Our world is also just kind of indifferent to it. Meaning, some people are so happy with the world that they've constructed, their own little lives that they've constructed, they don't care about truth regardless what it means. Okay? You go, okay, hell is a real place and you can have hope in Jesus Christ if you put your faith into Jesus. They don't care because the truth of their life, hey, that my little life and my little section of what I've kind of developed and constructed for me has worked for me, so thanks for letting me know, but I'm just going to continue on and I'll be fine. Okay? Topping it all off, there's an increased intolerance of people that actually believe in absolute truth. And by the way, do you hear the hypocritical nature of that statement? The doctrine is be more intolerant of those who actually believe in absolute truth. And what is that? That is an absolute truth. When you start going down that road, that's my absolute truth, that I need to be intolerant toward you because you believe in absolute truth. Well, you just shot yourself in the foot. Trying to explain that to some folks doesn't work real well, though. When we add all this stuff up, we see real quickly why it's difficult to proclaim the gospel in our society, which brings us back to this idea of pre-evangelism or conversational evangelism. If we think of evangelism as planting seeds, so for those of you who are farmers or gardeners or whatever, if we think of that as planting seeds, pre-evangelism would be what you do to prepare the ground, right? There's no farmer in his right mind who is going to go out to the field after a long, hard winter and just start chucking seed everywhere. They are going to do everything they can to till up the ground, get it good and soft so it's ready to receive the seed. That's what pre-evangelism is. That is working to till up the ground of someone's heart so that they will be ready to receive the gospel. So for pre-evangelism to be fruitful, we have to reconsider what evangelism itself is. Most of us grew up in church understanding that evangelism is proclaiming the gospel and inviting people to accept Jesus Christ. And that's not a bad definition, except it misses one little point. Evangelism is a process. We always think of it as a one-time thing. I'm going to tell you the gospel, ask you to accept Jesus. If they say no, well, then I've tried my best. Evangelism is a process. Paul said it. He said, I planted, Apollos watered, and God made it grow. That is a process. So we need to think of sharing with our friends and family as a process. You may not even be close to sharing the gospel with a friend. But if you can help them take one step closer toward Christ, you're in the ballpark, okay? You can always continue that conversation later on. And sometimes you may not even get someone to take a step closer actually to Christ, but you may get them to take one step further away from something that they have been trusting in. Whether they realize it or not, they're taking a step closer to Christ. But people have been trusting in that for so long, if you can get them to even take a step away and go, oh, there is some weakness there, then you're getting them to move in the right direction. Too often we equate evangelism with what we call reaping or harvesting. So basically, we say the gospel and then people just fall all over us and say, yes, I want that. Okay? And there are some people, you've probably met a few, who just happen to come across the people at just the right time, and as soon as they present the gospel to them, people really are coming to them hand over fist going, I want to know about Jesus. There are some people that God has called to that role. But a lot of us feel like failures because we think that that's what the gospel is, or that's what evangelism is. When we share the gospel and say, hey, would you like to accept Jesus? And they say no, then we feel like failures and we walk away. God may not have called you to that reaping role, or you may only get it from time to time. And others may, it seems like, constantly get it. But God's going to lead you and guide you as to what role that is and who you need to be talking to. Norman and David Geisler wrote a book called Conversational Evangelism, which I built some of this off of. And what they said is, we are not called to bring all persons to Christ, simply to bring Christ to all persons. Understand the difference? It is not our job to get someone to accept Jesus. It is our job to bring Jesus to them and help them see the beauty and the wonder and the awe of who Christ is. Okay? So with all that in mind, evangelism would be better thought of as every way possible, helping your non-believing friends to take a step closer to Christ. So our goal in evangelistic encounters. Too often we get trained that unless you get that full statement of who Jesus is, the full statement of the gospel out, you haven't done evangelism. We got to get that idea out of our heads. Unless God prompts you, it is better to take a long-term view of things. Okay? If you have a relationship with someone, guess what? I hate to say it this way, but leave them wanting more. Too often, Christians were trained to push so hard that we wind up pushing people away. It's like, push to a point, and then stop. So that they are ready to think about those things. They still want to walk away and think about what you said. They still want to come back and ask more questions later on. They want to continue to have the conversation and stay in conversation with you, rather than pushing, being so forceful and pushing them away. So for instance, if you meet somebody on a plane, that's a time when, you know, you only got this one shot, right? And a lot of times we feel like, we got to get the whole gospel out to this person, or we haven't done our job right, and God's going to judge us for this. Do we really think that God doesn't have other people that can come along and help that person? Do we really think that if we get the conversation this far, we can't pray when we walk off that plane and say, God, I was only able to get to this point with this guy. I'm praying for Joe right now that you're going to bring somebody into his life who is going to take that part of the conversation, pick it up, and carry it forward. And then guess what? Joe sees not only is it that weirdo on the plane who believes this stuff, there's this guy over here that I just met, and he believes that stuff too. And he starts to see a network of other people that believe it. But why is it that we don't trust God that way? Too often we want to push too hard. Some of the methods that we have learned over the years have become offensive. And I'll be honest with you, I do not like hard sells. When I walk into a store, I avoid the salespeople on basic principle, okay? I don't want to talk to you people, leave me alone. If I could have a sign that just said that on my chest when I walked in, leave me alone, I would put it there, okay? I don't want to talk to them because I know what I'm after, I don't need to talk to you. If I do need to talk to you, I'll come get you. Really, I will. I don't like the hard sell. Neither does other people in the world. Okay? And here's the thing. The people in the world have believed what they believe for so long that when you come in and you say, this is now what you're supposed to believe, that's a hard sell. They're pushing on things a little too hard that way. Okay? When we employ offensive methods, it's not really any wonder why non-believers don't want to be around Christians. Now, will using inoffensive methods mean that it's going to increase our effectiveness and no one's ever going to be hostile to our message? Certainly not. God already promised us, Jesus already said, you're going to come across people who hate you simply because you're a Christian. Does using an inoffensive method guarantee that we're never going to have to say something difficult to someone or possibly be a little offensive with what we say? Certainly not. There are times when you're going to have to push on difficult areas and say, oh, sorry, I don't care if you don't like this or not. This is just flat out the truth, and you need to hear this. And you do it lovingly, and you do it when the Holy Spirit guides you. How deep do you go with someone when you talk to them? Kind of already mentioned it, but you know the adage, less is more. You leave them at a place where they're wanting to know more about spiritual things. Good method for speaking to people about Christ, this whole pre-evangelism thing. One of the best ways we can begin to work this idea of pre-evangelism is allow people to surface truth for themselves. Okay? We all know that the best lessons learned in life are the ones that we learn on our own, rather than someone necessarily having to tell us. We need to help people discover the truth for themselves. And if you're anything like me, I hate being told what to do. And I hate being told what to think. Okay? So when I talk to someone like about a Bible passage or something, and they just simply tell me this is what it means, and they don't describe anything, they don't give me whys, they don't give me anything around that, I'll dig my heels in and go, I'm believing what I'm going to believe, and you're not going to prove me. Now, if they're going to dialogue with me and help me see the strength of their position and the weakness of my position, then I'm more apt to go, oh, okay, you're right. The people that we're trying to talk to have believed what they believe for so long that when we come in and we try and push up against them like that, all we do is come off as a know-it-all. So we need to learn how to dialogue with people and help them see the weakness of their position and the strength of our position. Okay? One of the best ways you can do this, and again, this is just the introductory part of things. If you've ever read through the Gospels, you know how Jesus operated. Jesus liked to ask questions. Look no further than the woman at the well. Now, he only asked really one question when you read through the story, but he also used a whole lot of evocative statements that made her think and kept her working in her mind as to what she was really doing in life. And if you remember what she said to the townspeople when she went running back, she said, "Come meet this guy who told me everything I ever did." Now, according to what we have, he didn't tell her everything she ever did, but he did point out certain things he knew, okay? Jesus also spoke in parables. What is a parable? At its basic roots, a parable is a story. You know, people like stories. You talk to people in stories and they respond a whole lot better when you're able to put it in context, in some sort of a life context. Jesus did it for two reasons. He was trying to block the truth from people who didn't really want to hear the truth. They didn't really want to know it. So he would speak in a story that would just kind of go over their head and they wouldn't get it. And that helped them not be responsible for that truth, for one thing. But he also did this because people love to hear the stories. And that was a way of drawing people in to help them understand what was going on. Another way of doing pre-evangelism is finding common ground with people. We saw this with Paul in the book of Acts. He would walk through in Athens at Mars Hill, and basically he's like, "Okay, yeah, you remember that altar over there to an unknown God? I'm here to tell you who he is." And so everybody's going, "Well, we want to please all the gods, so we better listen to this guy so that we know who this God is that he's telling us about." And that's what he was doing, was using common ground. When Paul was in Derbe and Lystra, he used the common ground of nature to draw those people in and say, "Guess what? Nature points to the fact that there's a creator, and here's where you need to find him at." Jesus did the same thing, finding common ground. You guys remember the story when Jesus healed the paralytic? The one that was lowered through the ceiling at his feet, Jesus used common ground with the Pharisees. Jesus knew what the Pharisees were thinking. They were thinking, "Nobody can forgive sins except God." And so Jesus steps forward and says, "Because, and so you know that I have the authority to do what I just said, get up and walk." Okay, Jesus is using that common ground, saying, "Oh, you think that only God can do this? You're right. And I'm him. And I'm going to prove it right now by raising this man up and letting him walk." He's using common ground in those ways. And by the way, from that story, we also get something else. The Pharisees, after Jesus did this and proved his point and used common ground, only got more upset with Jesus. So just because you use common ground to reach someone for Jesus does not mean they're going to say, "Thank you for helping me understand this better. Thank you for pointing out the weakness in my position. Thank you for helping me find common ground with you." Some of them may walk away and be more frustrated, more angry with you because you were able to find common ground with them. Okay? But again, Jesus promised us that that's going to take place simply because we're Christians. Putting all of this together, over the next few weeks, we're going to start this process of breaking pre-evangelism down into a little simpler steps. But before we can really do anything in pre-evangelism, there's something you have to learn how to do first. Listen. You got to learn how to listen. I don't know whether it was our nervousness before and the methods of evangelism that we would learn, or whether it was just because we had this little scripted thing of evangelism that we had to stick to, but oftentimes we would not listen to what a person would actually say. We were either just trying to get through our little script, or we were so nervous with our hands shaking that we didn't know what to do, and we just kept, you know, doing the bull's run right through everything and trying to get to our point. Fact is, we need to take the time to listen to people, where they're coming from. That's going to help us to identify some of the false ideas that they have and where those ideas come from, whether it's about moral absolutes, whether it's something from a previous religion they had or a previous experience, bad experience they had with religion, whatever it may be. We need to listen to people so that we can understand who they are and where they're coming from. Then we can start learning how to deal with some of the false ideas. And then deconstruct those false ideas and then help rebuild truth into their life. That's kind of the basic process in a nutshell, is listening, deconstructing, and then reconstructing. That's the whole process in a nutshell. In this process, too, we'll look at one false idea I thought about going through several different false ideas that you might go out there and experience, but this isn't quite the venue for that. That would be more like a philosophy class, and that would take quite a bit of time to go through all of that stuff. I'm going to give you one as an example next week so that you guys can understand what I'm talking about and kind of see the process in work. But then you got to put on your thinking caps and be able to do it yourself when you get in front of someone else and you're talking with that individual. Okay? But more than anything else, I want this series of messages and this year to actually be put into practice. So I'm going to tell you up front, I've already got two people in my mind that I'm praying about, and I was praying about them on the way into church this morning, that God's going to give me opportunity and right words and the building of the relationship to be witnessing to these folks. Because I've already talked with both of them, and I know where both of them are. One is almost hostile to the gospel. The other is fairly open, but has some reservations. Looking for those opportunities to be able to speak to these people. And so what I want you to do is start thinking of some people in your life that you need to be sharing the gospel with. Neighbor, coworker, friend, family member, whoever it is, but think of some of those people that you need to share the gospel with. And by the way, this is a little aside, but don't expect it necessarily when you do start to talk to them to always go well the first time. Unless you were a child prodigy, chances are you probably fell over when you rode a bike the very first time. Skinned your knees, skinned your hands, elbows, all that kind of stuff. When you start doing this the first time, you can probably expect that you're going to lose your balance and go smack into a tree somewhere, okay? Figuratively speaking, of course. But expect that. Don't let that discourage you. Let that motivate you to go, okay, what happened this time, and how do I fix it for next time so that I don't smack into that same tree again, okay? But I want us to think wider with kingdom eyes. We are a part of God's kingdom, and we were not called to be a part of God's kingdom just for us. We were called to be a part of God's kingdom to let others know about the kingdom. So what we're going to do to close today, we're going to close in a couple of minutes of silent prayer for you to be asking God right now, God, place a couple of people on my heart and my mind as to who I need to be talking to, that I can be making this year a point of praying for and seeking opportunities to be sharing Christ with. So we're going to take a moment for silent prayer, and then in just a little bit, I will close. Individuals that you want us to be speaking with. Lord, not only putting those people on our hearts, but keeping them on our hearts and our minds. Lord, help us to be remembering to be praying for them regularly, daily even, Lord, that you are going to be working in that person's heart to be drawing themselves to you. But Lord, also that you're going to be giving us opportunities for us to be able to start these conversations with them and start these dialogues, to be able to talk with them and share with them the beauty of the gospel and the reason why you really came. Lord, I pray that you're going to help us to learn as we go, that we're going to have things that are going to come up, that are going to have objections that we may not have answers to. Just means we've got to go dig a little bit more and do some studying so that we can come back with an answer. Lord, help us to understand and to start viewing evangelism as this process, as this walk with another individual as we gently walk them toward you. I ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.